You're listening pretty late. It's Friday night. It is the Friday before Christmas, the Friday before Hanukkah starts, as a matter of fact. And producer Dan Long was getting a little bit nervous. I texted him about 20 minutes ago. I'm like, am I on or is Preps Plus on first? I know the Blackhawks only had a 25-second overtime, but there you go. That was so sad. We lost in 25 seconds of overtime. Boom, game over. That was really sad. But Dan, are you okay?
Yeah, we're all good now.
You're good,
I was prepared to start the show on screen phone calls for as long as it took.
I think that's a good plan. Here's why we were really why we cut it so closely. Every Christmas, my family has been doing Pizzeria Uno's. My dad was a cab driver, so he had really erratic hours. And my mom kind of got tired of worrying about like when she should have it ready, because Christmas Eve can be very busy for cab drivers. So she started this tradition of buying pizza. The pre-cooked pizzas, so she could heat it up. You know, Dad would let her know 45 minutes, hour out, when he was going to be home, and she'd have it ready to go. So I was going to wait until tomorrow to do it, but that's why I was texting you, hey, are we starting on time? And since I didn't hear from you, I'm like, I think I can make it. And I stopped at Pizzeria Uno's over there at Ohio. Elliot, what's the other cross street that we, what's Ohio and... Well, everyone knows where Pizzeria Uno is in Chicago downtown, right? Ohio and Dearborn. And the manager goes...
Ontario.
Is it Ontario?
No, Ontario. No, you're right.
Is it Ontario?
No. Ohio and Ontario parallel to each other.
I think Dewey's is on Ontario, isn't it?
Oh, maybe it's Dewey.
Yeah. That's Representative Martwick. And I got in there, and the manager walked up and he goes, have you had our pre-cooked pizzas before? And I said, have I had them? I've had them every year since I was a kid. And he goes, hold on a second. He goes, talk again. I was like, what? He listens to the show every night on his way home to Indiana.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
That's
it was
awesome.
Very exciting.
That puts a smile on your face.
It does. He was very sweet. We exchange information. We're hoping to have him on the show sometime because I love Uno's. And that's part of my holiday prep. How has your holiday season been coming, Rep?
It's been an interesting holiday season.
Why is that?
not to get too personal, but my family's had a series of health challenges, including myself, that we all got through with shining colors.
Wow.
So it's like a really thankful holiday season. That, and I got a big, bouncy, smiley little baby boy that is just, you know, the greatest thing that's happened to me. And certainly, I think my family would all agree they are greatest addition. So we're all excited about that.
Well,
too.
Your son is just gorgeous. Where does he go by? Rob? Yeah. Robbie?
Bobby. He's
Bobby.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah.
And how old is he now?
He will be almost 16 weeks tomorrow.
Okay. And so. Is mom changing different holiday outfits for him? Because I remember when Griffin's first Christmas, he had all the really cute like elf onesies, the Santa onesies, just all the penguin on the pajamas.
Yeah, lots of fun holiday stuff that doesn't last long, just until, you know, the next burp when he throws up all over it. So.
The next bit. You have to have backup onesies.
That's right. We have lots of them, so it's great.
And how involved are you in decorating and doing the shopping for the holidays and prepping for the celebration?
So, you know.
And you could say not very much. You could say that your wife handles everything.
She's been fantastic helping organize everything. She, at one point in her life, she worked in a department store wrapping presents. So they come out like professional.
She's like a wrapping ninja, isn't she?
She is a wrapping ninja, yes.
She's a flurry of scissors, tape, and paper. I can just see it right now.
Yes.
I have to come to your house next time.
I know. Trust me. And she actually really likes wrapping presents, which...
I've heard some people talk about that right here on the station. I can't remember if it was Judy Pilak or Mary Vanderbilt. Somebody really loves wrapping presents. And I just, you know, I was thinking of that as I was wrapping, and especially like the oddly shaped items. Elliot, are you a wrapping paper or a gift bag kind of guy?
Oh, wow. I do like the gift bag, but let's face it, there's certain things that won't go in gift bags.
That's true.
So, I mean, if I can get away with the gift bag, because I do little tricks with the tissue paper that you can put inside.
What do you mean you do tricks?
You know, different things.
Like,
you know?
Paper animals? What are you doing? What kind of tricks are you doing?
Origami. Yeah. but, you know, there is something, you know, there is a sense of accomplishment you get when you get some wrapping paper and those corners look just right and the paper lines up just right, you know, and the folds. That rarely happens, though. So, you know.
Yeah. So I was just going to say that, you know, I wrap, the extent of my wrapping is wrapping my wife's presents.
Right.
Which makes them easy to identify under the tree.
short end on one. It's all puffy, and the tape is all, there's more tape than paper.
Yeah.
I am not the best. My mother is a wonderful wrapping paper expert. She does a great job. There's also something to we have a lot of we save a lot of paper. Like we you know if we, you have odds and ends, and I have this actually a great bag for saving Christmas wrapping paper, but so I have this wide array of paper, and I realize I really need to start paying attention when I buy it because I love the thicker paper. You buy that thin stuff, and it like you fold it over one end, and it pops through, the corner pops through. Yeah, it's a. And I'm saying this right now as I know there are people wrapping gifts as we speak, and I want to tell you I told Elliot on the way here what
I thought Santa did all that.
Well, but like the gifts amongst family members and things.
I mean,
like that.
I didn't. That's the thing. What does Santa wrap?
Come on in, Roger Badish. Come join us. Come. I have some cookies somewhere. Let me see your tie. This lovely tie. This is. Oh, your dreidel. You know what? I didn't wear my dreidel skirt. I have a dreidel skirt. I'm sorry. I didn't wear
awesome.
That. Yes, I do. It's reversible. It's blue velvet on one side and dreidels on the other side.
And have you ever spun yourself around?
I will do it on Tuesday. Will you be here? I know you're in for a bunch of nights. Are you here Tuesday or Wednesday?
Tuesday. I'm here Tuesday till about 5.
Oh, only till 5? And then about Wednesday?
Wednesday overnight.
So I'll see you on Wednesday. I will wear my dreidel skirt because it'll still be Hanukkah.
Excellent.
I found out years ago that we have my legal last name is actually a name that was created during the Spanish Inquisition for a Jewish family that ended up fleeing Spain on my dad's side. And which was not something my father wanted to know because he was so, I mean, when you're Irish,
right?
And you want to be, you know, it's some proud Irish lineage there. And he could trace it back and then to a certain point, and we found out there was more to that. There was a part of the family that actually was in Bavaria, and they were, and then there's a portion of the family that was French Jewish. Did I ever tell you this, Elliot? So many.
Now you're going to tell me that at one point
on my dad's side, yes,
there was a member of your family that had a nanny that sang, you know, and then the rest of the family
that's
was like
awesome.
A singing.
Oh,
troupe.
That's right. That might like, that's entirely possible.
So I've had friends do the 23andMe thing where you do the gene sequencing, and then what they can do is they can actually trace your ethnic heritage through your genes.
Yes.
And it's amazing how many people come back finding out that they're something that very different than what they thought they were.
Our newsman Vic Vaughn just did that, and I
that's right.
And someone messaged me because he found out he's a part Native American, significantly so. And I made a joke. I said, "Are you going to get in a casino?" And someone got very angry with me. They're like, "Thumbs down on that joke." Hello, also Native American, and we've been looking into the our lineage as well. And not that I'm saying that it's okay to it's a weird time to say anything apparently because we all need a safe space now, don't we? As far as what's considered to be politically correct. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. I'm having a tough time even with that when I say happy holidays. I'm like, why aren't I saying Merry Christmas? Everyone's in my head.
Well, you say happy holidays. I was thinking about this the last couple of weeks also because of the great debate. Every time you turn on something, someone's having this debate.
Yes.
I can say happy holidays because there are at least 3 holidays happening.
Yes.
This week. This weekend.
Yeah, they're overlapping. They're crowding each other so
right.
much so.
So I can wish you happy holidays because I don't know which one you celebrate and I don't want to offend you necessarily.
Yes.
I don't want to presume that you are Catholic, Jewish, non-Catholic or non-Jewish or followers of
exactly.
A Festivus or
Festivus.
Some other.
I'm glad you're here. You have your sleeves rolled up because it's time for the test of strength.
Oh, dear.
We're going to wrestle.
Oh, are you really?
God.
Facebook Live.
Okay.
All right, then.
We're arm wrestling?
No, wrestle.
Wrestle.
You got to take our shirts off and wrestle.
Oh.
I ain't taking
that's
no shirt
not
off.
Going on Facebook
no.
Live. That's not happening.
No. In my mind, guess what? In my mind, you win. But so that's why I say happy holidays. But if I know that you celebrate Christmas, I'll say Merry Christmas. Half my family is Catholic and celebrate Christmas. We got the Christmas tree and the menorah in the house.
And when people say Merry Christmas to you, do you flinch?
I'm fine.
All right, then.
I'm hokey-dokey with
it. Why are you so contentious? You sound cantankerous.
No, I'm tired of the debate. We got more important things to worry about.
I'm not debating.
Yeah, and so I have a question, and I'm okay with it. I mean, listen, I'm the politician. I always want to try and be correct, right?
Yeah.
But the viewpoint seems to be say happy holidays so you don't offend someone with your greeting. Shouldn't it be greet me with whatever your holiday is, and I won't be offended by it. Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be wished any holiday.
I know,
right? So it's a way of conveying I'm happy about my holiday and I'm sharing it with you.
When I say happy holidays to someone, I'm not doing like the double take before you say it. And it's like, ooh, do I say Christmas? Do I say Hanukkah? No, I'm not doing that. I just, in the joy of the season,
right?
I just, hey, how you doing? Happy holidays.
Before we go to break, let me say this. If I say happy holidays, you take it with the goodwill with which I intend it. More after this on 720 WGN.
Let us all now sing our praises to the Lord today. Although you may not share our belief system, which is perfectly okay.
Maybe you worship an abstract being that is kind of vague. Or maybe you just worship a guy whose name is Greg.
Perhaps your religion doesn't include a time called Lent, but whatever your religion is, we support you 100%.
So sit around the fire and have a chestnut roast, or raise a glass in toast to happy days, Donnymost.
But if you prefer to eat Indian food on Christmas Day, I can only shrug my shoulders and say no. Namaste.
Personally, I prefer turkey.
This is how I feel. I think this is the mood that we have. Hey, whatever it is you got going on, I wish you the very best. Enjoy. Happy holidays. Merry, merry, joy, joy. Richie wanted to join the conversation with us. Hey, Richie, what do you think about all this? Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Well, you know, it's a shame, Patty, is that we have to give it a second thought. That's
exactly.
That's really troubling. You know what I mean? You can't just... If I happen to say Merry Christmas to you and you're not Christian, I didn't mean offense by it. That's the major holiday for this country. That's the one most people have off. That's the one that, you know, we were founded by Christians. You know, it's not an offense.
Right.
It's just sad that that's what we've come to.
But we've also come to, if I say happy holidays, people get mad and say, I celebrate Christmas. Say Merry Christmas, damn it. So it's not just a one-way street anymore.
That's right.
Well, the happy holidays, I think, is acceptable. That encompasses, to me, that means Christmas and New Year's.
Exactly. I think, you know what? I think it's all acceptable as long as it's not an FU sort of situation.
Well, you know, what's funny, too, is I've been mistaken for Jewish over the years. I'm Italian and I have a larger nose, so... You know, I take it in stride. If somebody wishes me a happy Hanukkah, I don't sit there and go, oh, my God, how dare you?
Roger.
You know, are you implying that I'm Jewish?
Hanukkah?
I'm good.
Well, Hanukkah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. The line that came to my mind was not the pronunciation. Was I was just going to say, funny, you don't look Jewish.
Well, you know what I mean? Wait. I never once for a moment took that as something malicious.
No. And Richie, but I think I love that. Do people say, hey, with your big nose and your dark hair, you look like it's Hanukkah time. Huh?
Well, that's what does it. You know, I've mistaken before. You know, are you Jewish? And I get it. That's fine.
Hey, I'm the same way. People always assume that I'm Asian or Italian or whatever you like.
And no, I just told Adam upstairs. He says, you're Jewish?
Yeah.
And I go, yeah. He says, no, you're not.
but my overall point is it's just a shame that not just with the holidays, but with anything that you can't say that you're for this without having it be against everything that's not bad.
I know. Well,
it's a shame.
It's the intention, right? It's always about the intention. And no matter how much you try to convince somebody you were meaning well,
And when you receive it, when someone says to me, you know, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, obviously you're not going to know that I'm Jewish and I celebrate Hanukkah mainly. But if you're of the spirit, you accept it in the spirit.
Right. Yes.
So don't get all
don't,
bent
don't
out of shape.
Don't go running for the ACLU and
exactly.
get your lawyer. You know what I mean? It'll be okay.
It's the holiday season. Be of good cheer. Don't be a,
right.
you know.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Thank you, Richie. Merry Christmas, sir.
Likewise.
Have a wonderful new year. Which reminds me, I need to get my ACLU card. Is that you can be a member of the ACLU?
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should do that.
A card-carrying
member of the ACLU. Right. That's my goal for 2017. On the line with us, we have just a moment. We are in the studio with Representative Robert Martwick, and we wish your family a Merry Christmas and wonderful holiday season in particular.
Thank you.
I mean, we like you, but we are so excited for Bobby and his first magical Christmas.
He's the best.
And Elliot, you have a house guest. You have Sinbad, the cat that's been rescued from a very tragic situation.
Yeah, and Sinbad, the alien-looking cat. He looks very much like people keep messaging me and saying he looks like a Muppet because he has a weird haircut and big eyes.
You must follow Elliot on Instagram or Facebook, and you'll see these amazing pictures. He doesn't look like he is of this world. Roger Badish also joined us in studio, and Sue wanted to join the conversation as well. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good evening. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, mm-hmm. My brother-in-law is Jewish, and
thank you.
Again, everything to everyone, and I just was saying that I grew up my entire life of saying Merry Christmas to people, and in the last probably 10 years or so of my life or so, then I'm like, oh my gosh, should I offend someone by saying Merry Christmas? I mean, I've house sat for this one lady in Oak Park that's Jewish, and I mean, I just house sat for them recently, and I said Merry Christmas, and I said, oh my goodness, and I was like, oh my gosh, now I'm second guessing myself about that. I said Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays, and she's like, it's okay. and you know, I just, you know, really don't want to hurt anyone's feelings and respect everyone, but, you know, we should all, you know, we all deserve to respect ourselves too and so on. And
yeah, I agree. I agree, Sue. I think that when you intend something in goodwill, you know, you want it to land that way. And we all, but you know what? It's kind of like, we have to do things and also just accept that it's taken the way it is. I think that we can't respond in a contentious way either. I think that's where we have to come to.
I agree.
Yeah. Sue, Merry Christmas, and it's always great to hear
Christmas.
From you. Thank you, darling.
You too.
Of course, more after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer. Go to geektome.net for all the cool stuff he's written. And we need to talk about Rogue One later because everyone keeps asking me about Rogue One. They assume that I've seen it. Have you seen it, Representative Martwick?
You know, did I mention that I have a 16-week-old child at home? I know. Movies are not really on the schedule right now, but I would love to find a way. If you want to babysit.
If we can get a tandem, because I have to get a babysitter for Declan. Declan doesn't enjoy sitting in movie theaters, I need to do that. But I saw Elliot had posted a picture. I'm like, do you have a screener? And it was not. That's why I got so excited. We were going to invite you over. We're like, come to our house. Have some pizza. Have some Unos.
You know, if I had a screener, I'd be over at your house right away.
Griffin would be very excited.
Yeah. But no, it was the novelization.
Yes, it was not the movie. So I was. I know. Well, we'll figure out a way.
Sounds good.
We should. You have so many people in your family. You should be able to have a babysitter to watch.
Yeah,
Bobby.
You
don't want to leave Bobby. Let's be honest.
Well, that's true too. There's no doubt about that.
There used to be at the movie theaters at the Village Crossing. They used to have a day of the week where parents could bring their babies, so that like everyone would bring like the car seats and the strollers. Mm. And I think it was on Wednesdays. I don't know if they still do it. But it's a really fun way. Although Rogue One's a loud movie. I took Griffin to see Mr. and Mrs. Jones, the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie movie.
And there was Smith.
Smith. And there
that
was
loud.
Yes, it was. So Rogue One would be, it's a little hard on the kids. Yeah. But they usually, what they do is they adjust the sound too, though, so that it's not as loud and you don't feel self-conscious because everyone's got a baby, you know, whether there's, you know, crying or other situations. Right. Anyway, we had our engineer, Adam Phillips, just kind of come in and I introduced you as Representative Martwick, and he said state representative, and you said yes, and he goes, okay. And does that happen a lot where people just kind of go, oh, Great. Thanks. Thanks for nothing, Rep. It does, that seems to be like, you know, when I tell people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, and rightly so, people are frustrated, you know, and I hope that it would be the same situation if I was the other guy.
Right.
You know, if I was the governor sitting here and he came in and he go, Rauner? Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Right. Because
but is there a gravitas to that role, though, where people feel immediately as though they can't react that way? Like you're sort of, you know, the faceless, nameless people that people don't know who their reps and senators are. They know who Rauner is.
Yeah.
They know who Madigan is.
I would say that it's, you know, at least for me in my district, it's probably 50-50. And I say that honestly because, as you said, there's a good portion of people that just don't know us or what we do. And so their opinions are not at least based in actual knowledge.
Right.
But again, there's a lot of people in my district who know what I'm doing, what I stand for, what I'm fighting for. And so you live for those congratulatory, keep up the fight, keep up the good work. You're doing a great job. Don't give up. We're with you, you know.
Well, because as a Democrat, I think that you occupy an interesting space. You fight for working families, and you have a lot of police officers and firefighters who live in your district who tend to be conservative, and you fight for their right to bear arms. You fight for their unions, for the work that they do, for their pensions. So I think that there's sort of this line that you have to straddle that's different from the rest of the state, where we think of the rest of the state, especially in the rural areas of, you know, look, the Chicago gets too much money. We don't want to pay for all the things upstate. We have our own concerns down here. You know, we're being bled dry. In Chicago, this tends to be a city with a lot of Democrats, but your district has a lot of both, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's
Republicans and Democrats.
It is a predominantly Democratic district, but it is certainly more conservative than areas just to the east of me, where though they are very, very liberal Democrat. My area is still got of. I mean, I would say that the majority of the Democrats in my area are pretty liberal, pretty progressive, but there is a smattering mixed in of the conservative Democrat, the pro-labor yet social conservative type of Democrat.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the challenge of being a Democrat. Is that we have a very big tent. We welcome everyone under it. No matter what your opinions are, you've got a place under our tent, and that makes it challenging. You know, that's why we have a hard time cobbling together 71 votes when we've got, because people don't have the exact same opinions on issues, even though they both wear the Democratic moniker.
Well, I think that that's nationally the problem, is cobbling together a message of what is being accomplished, and even the fight, right? Elliot has said this many times on the show, that Democrats don't fight the same way Republicans do when it comes to framing the argument. And I think really stirring emotions. It seems as though for the last 20 years, perhaps, Democrats have struggled with what the message is, what Democrats stand for.
I agree with that. And you know, I think there's a lot going on underway where I think Democrats nationwide and certainly in Illinois are, I mean, I've been part of a number of groups that are working together to try and put together a message that says this is what we stand for. And even then, it's a challenge, right? It's hard to solidify that into one nice, neat talking point.
Right.
And, you know, the way I always describe it, the reason I say I'm a Democrat is that, you know, I personally like to be for the little guy. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of good Republican friends. I've been in here with my friend Mark Batnick. I believe that Republicans care just as much about education and about people having jobs and having opportunities. They just have a very different way of providing it. Democrats are more direct. We feel if someone needs addiction counseling, they should get counseling. If someone needs assistance, they should get assistance. If a single mother wants to go to work and needs child care assistance, we should provide that for her.
Mm-hmm.
We believe in providing opportunity for the people who need it now, directly. My Republican colleagues believe in a more trickle-down theory. You know, they believe in opportunity,
right?
But you got to create your own.
Right. Right. And that's
pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Well, the idea of the free market, right, of capitalism, right, is that everything will take care of it. People will earn what they deserve in a free market, that the market will determine how much somebody is worth. Right. And we have seen And I didn't realize that when I was down in Springfield that the votes that were taken about in-home care was going to be as disastrous as it was, I think, because by the next day, and I wish that piece in the Tribune had come out sooner so that that would be a bigger talking point, was how much we pay care, the providers, the people who are really taking care of our disabled, our elderly. We're paying them $9 an hour. $9.35 an hour.
Yep.
So the market apparently has decided that the most vulnerable are not worthwhile. I mean, really, that's the bottom line. There is no other way to frame that. They are not worth paying for care. That's what we've decided as a state of Illinois. That's
well,
it.
Well, and it's, you know, there's some truth to that because, you know, and I studied economics in college. That's my degree. I'm an economics degree in college, and I studied, actually did a work, a year of master's work in it at DePaul University. But free market economics is great in a vacuum, but it doesn't actually happen, right? There is no such, when people say, well, we need to be more free market. Well, here's the thing. You either are free market or you're not free market.
Right. And otherwise, Exxon would get nothing.
Right.
They would get nothing.
That's right. And you can't pick and choose where you get to manipulate the free market for yourself and then deny other people that same sort of intervention into that market. And that's what we have here. And so the idea that the free, we need to be more free market, well, it doesn't work, right? It works in a vacuum, like every other social political theory in a vacuum is perfect. That all leads to a utopian society, but in reality, a pure free market system would be great if the intentions of those at the top were not driven by greed, right?
And that's what I don't understand how we can't see that the needs at the top, right? How much is enough? We talk about, well, if somebody who's the CEO of a company can make that much, well, they should. Well, they make that much because they're able to get cheap labor. They're able to get subsidies from the government. They're able to send their money offshore.
And they have the power and the influence to change the laws to favor themselves, which is immediately gets rid of the free market system.
We are fixing things. That's all I'm saying, Elliot. This is the year, 2007, not this year. The 2016 can just kiss my ass. Just really, seriously, all over the place. Really? Carrie Fisher? Princess Leia has a massive heart attack? Okay. I'm just saying. But we are 2017, we start locally. You know, people are worried about what's going on nationally. You know what? Now is the time to find out who your alderman is, who your council people are in your towns, who your representative is, who your senator is. Find out that information because they will listen. I know people don't believe me. Representative Martwick will listen to you. Before I had the radio show, I was in your office for a meeting about a school in your district.
That's right.
And you were listening, and there, and you know, as hard as it is to make the time to go and visit your rep or your senator or make that phone call. And by the way, I don't know if you should email anymore, because now that we see the email dump from Rahm Emanuel from the mayor, I don't know that you should be emailing, because if you're very passionate about something, do it in person, do it on the phone. Do it in person. Go down to Springfield. Come. We're going to do, this is the year, we're also doing the field trips in 2017. Taking you down. We're going to get on Amtrak. We are going down. We're going to stay at the whatever hotel. I don't know which one it's going to be. I love the State House.
Mansion View.
The motel? They don't have good Wi-Fi. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. It is the Friday before Hanukkah, the Friday before Christmas. It is it's a beautiful night, actually. It's damp. I think that it's weird when it's damp on the weekend before Christmas. You know, it was such a frozen tundra at the beginning of the week, and I'll take this. I will absolutely take this. Elliot Serrano joins us in studio. He is our chief geek officer and has suffered through many conversations about the governing of Illinois, and Representative Martwick, as one of our legislators, always here to share a great insight. We've had a lot of long conversations about democracy, and you get the democracy that you deserve.
Absolutely.
Is one of your philosophies.
That's one of my philosophies. And you know, I get this all the time. There is this convenient narrative, and it works good for people who have an agenda to try and convince people that it's that government. It's not that government.
It's yours.
It's your government.
It's yours.
And it is entirely what you make of it. And you can have whatever effect on this government that you want to have, and it can be tremendous. You can change the laws. You can affect the outcomes of elections if you are willing to put the time, the energy, the effort into it. So it's what you make of it. And when you choose not to, when you don't get involved, like you said, you get exactly what you deserve.
But also, I think the tone, don't you think? I think that what has happened now in the last year, the growing frustration from, and now we talk about how there's a disassociation with rural America, these, you know, this huge swath of America, the flyover states, mm-hmm. as New Yorkers and people in LA will call us, even though Chicago, obviously an urban, you know, densely populated space. But they call this the flyover states. You can't ignore us. You can't ignore us now with the results of the election. But, you know, the tone, the anger was also very ugly. And I think that has manifested in the last year, the kinds of things. I mean, even one of the campaign officials for Trump's, this guy who said that he hopes that Obama dies from mad cow disease after having, do you see this, where he hopes that Michelle Obama will be going back to being a man and go to live with apes in Africa. And I mean, that's the tone that was set by people who were frustrated and angry, and it grew and it fed on itself. And that's where we are now. That has sort of permeated. And so, you know, the fact that people have sort of sunk into that anger and have lived there is what has come to pass now, I think.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no doubt that there is a disconnect. And I've had some discussions with people about this. And, you know, we have to find a way to communicate, right? And we have these silos of communication where, in the big cities, all of us big city folks just talk to each other.
Right.
And then in the rural areas, all the rural folks just talk to each other. And I don't mean just direct conversation. I mean, even media and stuff like that. It's amazing to go to rural areas and turn on TV or radio and you hear something, you're like, that, what is this? Am I an alien? What happened? Right. And so we need to find a way to bridge that gap. That's the way we're going to start understanding each other and the needs and the concerns. That's one of the most fascinating things. And you know that about being in the legislature is being exposed to all of these wonderful, I mean, really good people, but they have very different views on the world than I do here in the city of Chicago. And it's good to have that broadening of your horizons, but we need to find a way really to get the whole country as a whole to start understanding that.
And we have to start here. By here, I mean everyone, right? You're mm-hmm. here, whatever that is. My here is we're going to start a new segment in 2017. And I'm calling it Tell Me More, which will pick communities throughout the country, not just in Illinois, because right now you can hear us in 38 states. And I want to know more about your town, about your county, about your community, about your block. And I think I'm trying to figure out the best way to start it. I think what we'll do is we'll just get a map. And I don't know if we throw a dart and, you know, Google that town, find out what's going on there, what the primary source of income is. What are people doing for a living there? And find someone in that town to talk to. I want to know more. Tell me more about where you live, right? Because we're not listening to each other. And I tell my stories about growing up in Chicago. I really love this city. And the amount of cynicism that I am met with, whether it's here or on social media or towns that I travel to. I mean, fortunately, we have the Cubs, so that's always going to be a wonderful touchstone. But I do love this city. And warts sounds like almost both too severe and minor for what we put up with in Chicago. But there's so much more to know about what that means to have grown up here. We need to take a break here. But coming up after the news, we want to talk about why Michael Madigan is really the only thing that stands between working families and disaster. More after this on 720 WGN. Producer Dan Long, who is running the show tonight, is there a reason why you're playing I Hate Myself for Loving You?
Not particularly. A lot of times I'll pick my own stuff, but I'm just grabbing stuff from out of your little library.
Yeah, this works for me. I do. Sometimes I do hate myself for loving you. In general,
me personally, or
for loving things in particular, I hate myself. I do not hate myself for loving the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. Representative Martwick joins us, and Elliot Serrano's in studio. We're hoping that Rob Martier will join us in studio for whiskey and a donut. We usually do whiskey and a cookie, but I made a stop on the way into the studio tonight. I don't hate myself for loving the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois. I've never lived anywhere else in my entire life. I should have, according to others, for my career, moved to Los Angeles or New York as a stand-up comic, as a writer, as a performer. But I've always thought, I want to stay in the place where I grew up. I want to raise my kids here. I've always lived somewhere that where I knew that it depended on who you knew to get things done, right? If you knew a guy, they could get you out of a ticket. They could help you get a job. I did. I grew up in Norwood Park.
Yeah, that was the way it was. Yes,
and
not anymore.
No, but I knew that it was. It even as a kid, my dad knew a lot of people, and I've talked about this many times on the show. My dad was somebody who knew politicians. He knew lawyers. He knew mobsters. He knew cops and firefighters. And he had this entire circle of friends where if you helped each other, if you knew a guy, you'd get things done. And I always I knew it was wrong. And did I benefit from that as a kid, as a 16-year-old getting pulled over on Nagel and Avondale, no turn between 4 and 6 p.m. And I went into court and I said no contest and my ticket was thrown out. I was like, I didn't understand. My dad's like, he goes, just say no contest, just no contest. And I didn't know what that meant. And I found out later, after he passed away, I found a lot of his papers. I found a lot of documents. I heard a lot more stories. And he was so tied into this city in ways, as a cab driver, which is fascinating to me. But I also knew that it was wrong. And I disagreed. I fought with my dad on a lot of things, whether it was social issues, whether it was politics, or the way he got things done. But at the same time, he was a guy who believed strongly in taking care of his family, of doing his best. He was a flawed human being. And maybe that's why when I see someone like Michael Madigan, who is a Speaker of the House, who people say he's accumulated all this power and he is what's standing between us and moving forward as a state. And he's been part of the problem for a long time. Well, he's been in power. He's been in office since 1972. Is that about in the 70s? Early 70s. And he is from an area that he has brought a lot of commerce to. I mean, the South Side of Chicago, that neighborhood, not dissimilar, not that much different from my neighborhood.
Right.
Right. I mean, in a lot of ways. And he has, over the years, consolidated power. He has learned how to work the state. And that has changed over the years. And I know that people hate him. There's a lot of hate for the Speaker of the House.
He is, I believe his approval rating statewide is at about 9%. Yeah. He's not well-liked.
I would say that there are, and I don't know him. I don't know him personally. And so the reason I draw the comparison to knowing my dad, whom I loved very much, my dad was somebody who had a good heart, but maybe did things that were, no, not maybe. My dad did things, he did bad things throughout his lifetime. And his reasons varied wherever he was coming from. And I don't know if that's why I can see around. And not that I like Michael Madigan, but I kind of am coming to a place where I'm starting to understand a little bit of that. Because we have spent the last year watching someone rise to power, running a campaign based on a lot of things that I disagree with and I don't understand. But people are like, well, he ran a good business. He's a billionaire. He's accumulated all this power financially. He must know how to run the country. Then why do we hate someone who has accumulated power at the state level and has been a roadblock in many ways to the things that someone like Governor Rauner, and by the way, Governor Thompson, Governor Edgar, Governor Ryan, Governor Blagojevich, there have been a lot of governors who have done things that are sideways. And things could have even been worse than they are now. That's the way I look at it.
Well, and you know, it's interesting when you bring up the whole, the way you're describing Mike Madigan, and for your listeners' benefit, I have never once taken a penny from Michael J. Madigan. When I ran my campaign, I ran it independent of him. He called me up 2 weeks before Election Day and said, "Can I send you some money? Can I send you some help?" And I said, "No, actually, I've got this." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I actually have more money than I need. Can I send you some?" And he laughed and hung up the phone. And I thought I was already in trouble, but that wasn't the case at all. You know, he of course, is the consummate Speaker of the House, really. I mean, he's the longest serving Speaker of the House in the history of the United States of America. And so there's no doubt he's done things to stay there. Does he have too much power? Well, it's debatable. And I would actually say I would be happy to hear that the answer, yes. I might even agree with you on that. Again, I consider myself independent of him. I've never taken a penny from the guy. In fact, I have given him donations to help Democrats get elected for office. But the power cuts both ways. There's no doubt that over a long career like his, he's done things that people might not like.
Right.
But he has used that power to pass, to cobble together votes to pass very, very important legislation, whether it's conceal carry, if you're a conservative, and you want to know why conceal carry passed in the Illinois House of Representatives, Michael J. Madigan. If you're a conservative and you like the idea of pension reform passed for one reason. I mean, there's a lot of people working on it, but the guy who ultimately has to maneuver and get things done is Michael J. Madigan. Would it have gotten done without him? There's a lot of people who would say no. Marriage equality, ultimately, Michael J. Madigan has a stamp on that. So he's been very effective, and he uses that power to get big legislation passed. He also uses that power to maneuver things and guide things the way that he sees, you know, things are not entirely his direction, but of course he weighs in on that quite a bit. He does listen to his caucus, I assure you of that, as a member of it, who speaks up, as you know, quite a bit. He takes into consideration the things we say. You know, there's a big debate right now, of course. There's the Rauner people have made a big issue of, are you going to vote for Madigan? Are you going to vote to put him in as speaker again?
Exactly.
Right?
So
because
meaning,
the first thing we do when we get inaugurated is we have a vote. Who's going to be the Speaker of the House?
Right.
And he's sent out, Governor Rauner has paid for people to walk around and follow Democratic legislators with cameras to ask them, are you going to vote for Madigan again?
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing some of my colleagues have sort of run from this and said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And, you know, I've called them up, and I'd be happy if anybody wants to turn a camera on. I'd be happy to say, yes, I'm voting for Michael J. Madigan. Not that I think that he is the greatest individual ever in the history of the world, but I think he is a fine man. I think he's a good speaker. And when push comes to shove, there's only two choices. I get to vote for the guy who stands up for working class people.
Right.
I get to stand up for the guy who fought for child care assistance for single working mothers, who fought for you know, reasonable wages for in-home health care workers and service providers. I get to vote for that guy. Or my only other choice is to vote for Bruce Rauner's, the guy who does whatever Bruce Rauner tells him to do, and
right.
That's Jim Durkin, the leader of the Republicans.
And they want their turnaround agenda. They want to limit the power of unions, of working families, of, you know, our firefighters, our teachers, and our police officers.
Which is fine if that's what you believe in, but that's not what I believe in.
Right.
So for me, the choice is easy. I would vote for Michael Madigan every day of the week and twice on Sundays over Jim Durkin. And Jim is a fine man, don't get me wrong. But his political beliefs are not what I believe in, and he has shown over the course of the last 2 years that he will do whatever Bruce Rauner tells him to do, and I'm not voting for Bruce Rauner. I'll take Michael Madigan over him any day of the week.
Elliot, how are you doing over there with all of this?
It's like I get pulled into this vortex of I'm kind of thinking like what listeners are feeling right now.
Oh, they hate Madigan. People, you know, hate Madigan. And he heard Representative Marwood say it's a 9% approval rating.
And it's funny that it's not until I'm in a room with a state rep and I get to hear all these other things. It's funny how that narrative is so different out in the public purview,
yes,
as opposed to when you listen to the folks that actually work behind the scenes. And that brings me back to my greatest frustration with Democrats, that you don't hear this out there. You know, it's just the thing that we get hammered by the other side over and over and over and over again about how ineffective, you know, government is, and how, you know, they don't know how to. And there is a bit of a, to me, I'll say, I get frustrated when I keep hearing the whole, well, Michael Madigan won't do this, and you know, Governor Rauner won't do that, and it's
after- well, the meetings thing, that was crazy. I don't know what the actual story was. By the way. Rob Martier joins us in studio, but I mean, like, you had this in the news stories that Michael Madigan refused to meet or said he had other obligations. These are the stories that, and Rauner did the same thing. Governor Rauner also said he couldn't make the meeting, and that's,
I cover in both directions.
It's bizarre.
You know, yeah, I try to be about as down the middle as I can.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest. They're being petulant. I mean, It's, you know, let's get together. Let's get this thing going.
Ooh, petulant. Let
me speak to the petulance. And Rob, I agree with you. I think there's too much of this petulance going on. But so that the listeners understand, it doesn't come from a place of out of the blue. Right. It comes from the history of dealing with each other. And 2 years ago, when Rauner got elected, everyone said, oh, this is going to be this great chess game between the chess master in Springfield,
Madigan.
Mike Madigan, and, you know, the billionaire businessman who knows how to get things done. And we're going to see how this plays out and all that. So and they did. They played chess with each other. What that did was, instead of actually sitting down and dealing with each other, they built mistrust. And like I said,
and all those rooks, all those poor rooks,
and the
bishops all laying on the side of the board.
We're all just pawns, right?
Yes.
There is so much stuff that goes on that would not happen in a, you know, if you were really trying to get stuff done. And it's both sides. I'm being honest. It's both sides. But you know, we got to drop the nonsense and get down to the business. But when I talk about that, we sit down and. For 2 years, there's been no budging, and
on the budget. Ooh, no budging on the budget.
No budging on the budget.
That's the title of the new segment, Elliot.
No budging on the budget.
Yeah, and wow. I got to tell you, we are days away from a deadline, and I'm going to tell you, there's nothing that's going to happen before that happens.
And that deadline is the interim budget.
Yeah,
right?
January 1st. Yeah.
We have been in the studio many, many nights, and Elliot and Patty and myself. We do come at things from opposite sides.
Yeah.
But what we have found in our conversations, the three of us and sometimes four, five of us,
sure.
is that there is a lot of common ground. A lot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of the untold secret of Springfield or Washington, mm-hmm. that behind the scenes and in the hallways, there's a fraternity, there's camaraderie there, and there's a recognition that things have got to get moving forward.
And I think the problem is that having only in sort of a cursory way dealt with Speaker Madigan and only through spokespeople of Rauner's office, those are the two, I mean, because I've never spoken to them directly, mm-hmm. those are the two that don't seem to have the common interest, and that being the people of Illinois. I think that I've talked to enough people on both sides of the aisle who I really do believe care. And there's the disdain is the hardest part that I get. And maybe I hear it differently when it's someone from the other side of the aisle. But the sort of dismissiveness that you get. And that happens. I think it happens on the Democrats and the Republican side.
Representative Sarah Feigenholz and I had a wonderful off-air conversation for the better part of about 20 minutes to a half an hour.
And who else was in the room at the time?
I think you were.
Also, Representative Anthony, so that'll be interesting.
Well, this was also a different conversation. And I am the biggest fan of Sarah Feigenholz. Now, she's a Democrat, but I remember listening to Representative Martwick in this very studio a few months ago, saying that he was elected by a constituency and he has to represent that constituency because those are your bosses.
Right.
And I totally agreed with you 100%. But at the same time, as I was listening to you and Patty converse, I'm thinking to myself, well, so too was Governor Rauner. And there is that impasse again because he was elected to Springfield to do a job by people who told him, let's rein this budget mess in.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't
mean go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, but on that same ballot, do you remember what else was on that ballot? The millionaire tax.
Yeah.
People in the state of Illinois said they wanted to pass a millionaire's tax, even at a higher rate at which they voted for Governor Rauner in. And that bill was voted down.
Yeah.
So it's incongruous to me. So if he was following what the people of Illinois wanted, wouldn't he look at the ballot and say, hey, the one I was elected on, they also wanted this to happen?
Well, that brings up an interesting question as to where we are now, because my understanding is that he's basically said, okay, I'm all for a tax increase, but I need some concessions from the Democrats.
And Rob, he said that from day one.
Correct.
From day one, he didn't say it, but in meetings, he said, sure. Well, if we're going to do this, then I want my agenda items, the turnaround agenda. And, you know, there are items of agreement that could be had, but I will tell you that the ultimate stumbling block is that he has picked five things, four of which there is absolutely no way that a Democrat can agree to the way that he wants them done. And he says, we won't address the financial problems of the state until you give me my agenda. And from day one.
What are those four?
Term limits, which I will not vote for under any circumstances, no way, no how. That is a philosophical thing. I think it is giving up your rights under a democracy.
We'll do that. We'll talk about that after the break. Go ahead. Term limits, let me write it out. Go ahead.
Term limits, workers' compensation, causation factor in workers' compensation reform. I'm all for workers' compensation reform. I will not vote for causation factor. The collective rollback of collective bargaining rights. And okay, now I'm going to do my.
You know what? You can Google it.
You know, unfortunately, he's looking at me for help, and I'm giving him none because
we have a lot of ground to cover.
Redistricting reform is on there, which I would agree to redistricting.
That was the fifth. That you said you agree with that. Okay.
Yeah, there's one more that I'm missing.
So we'll find it. We have a break here. 312-981-7200. I know some of you have been trying to call in. You got to be at least able to carry on a conversation. More after this on 720 WGN. Did you even hear me on that? I didn't have the right mic on, did I?
You were in the distance.
It was in the distance. Can I do it again? Get the stories. Was it like a faraway voice?
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, I think you had the mic.
Somebody else's mic was on.
Mic open. I thought it was me at first because these headphones cut out sometimes.
Apparently I yell when I do the reads. Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Rob Martyr, thank you so much for stopping by.
Good to be here.
It's been a while since we've had whiskey and a cookie.
Too long.
I know. I get complaints, by the way, when we don't do this. People notice. They're missing another segment, which we won't discuss, but... I miss talking about the weekend wind-up.
I like that other segment, too. That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't.
We'll revisit that.
Yeah,
at some point in time.
I need a sponsor for that. If anyone wants to sponsor that,
ooh.
I'm saying that's the only way it's coming back.
We could work on that.
All right, then. I think so. Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer in studio, trying to keep his head from exploding over conversations when it comes to governing the state of Illinois. You all right?
I'm like everyone who's listening to this conversation right now. Like, come on already, please. Please, please, I'm begging you.
Well, Representative Martwick has said in the past, and long conversations we've had, is you get the democracy that you deserve. And part of that is that this is a culmination. Where we are right now didn't happen instantaneously. It didn't even happen during the 80s. It didn't even happen in the 50s. It goes all the way back to the 1930s when we started raiding the pension funds, saying, hey, you know what? We have this money that we're setting aside. Why don't we go ahead and pay some of our bills that way? We'll pay this off next year. And for a good 70, 80 years, we decided to kick that can down the field. And that can is a little beat up, and it's us.
Yeah, and that's what I refer to as, I'd be interested to hear what Rob has to say about this. That's what I call false conservatism, right? The idea that the entire agenda of conservatism is to keep your taxes low. Well, that's great. But it's not about, if you're a true conservative, fiscal conservative, and what you're caring about is the taxes that people have to pay, then the issue shouldn't be how much taxes they pay today, but how much taxes they pay over the course of their life.
Right.
When we don't balance a budget and we let bills grow, we have a backlog of bills that's now $12.5 billion that we're paying 12% interest on. When we don't address that, every day that we don't address that, we make that situation worse. Well, guess who gets to pay that backlog of bills and the interest on it? We do. So ultimately, you're going to pay it one way or the other. The question is what's the best way to go about it? To me, fiscal responsibility should be the mantra of fiscal conservatism, meaning let's balance the budget. Let's not spend more than we take in, which has been a real issue in the state caused by both Democrats and Republicans over the course of the last 40 plus years. So let's address it. And that's what Governor Rauner said he was going to do. and yet he has made his political agenda of achieving these anti-democratic initiatives more important than actually solving the budget problem. He refuses to talk about solving the budget until we give in to his items that are not related to the budget. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that is truly being a fiscal conservative.
I think clearly from his point of view, he does see his turnaround agenda items as at some point in time affecting the bottom line, which
and the long-term taxes.
Correct. Yeah. I think most of us have to admit, you know, without some sort of pension reform, without some sort of tort reform, without some sort of, you know, workers' comp reform. Again, these long-term budgetary issues will affect that bottom line. Now, I do agree with you. The budget needs to be balanced. And Governor Rauner, because he's the quarterback, he's carrying the football right now. He's got to take the lead on this whole thing. But what I kind of pivot back to time and again is this notion of a shared sacrifice. And I understand, and certainly I'll admit hypocrisy here. If I were a member of a union, certainly I would want what's coming to me if I've been paying into something for oh so many years.
And promised.
Absolutely, absolutely. However, I'm not. So what I save and what I eat is what I kill, and what I get when, you know, 20, 25 years from now when, you know, God willing, I'm able to retire. But if there's this shared sacrifice and we're in such dire straits in this state, then I think collectively, now I'm willing to pay more taxes. I am. But I think collectively we need a little bit more, I guess, from the other side.
So and I appreciate that. And I would suggest then that is the reason why Illinois in 2010 passed the most significant pension reform passed mm-hmm. in the country, Tier 2 pension reform, which changed, dramatically lowered pension benefits for all new hires, which is what everyone says. Well, just change it for the new hires. We did that. The biggest problem that's existing is the people who existed before that. We passed pension reform to address that. That was found unconstitutional by the courts. And the courts have said...
Has it been 6 years? Since I saw that happening on the floor of the...
No. That was Tier 2 pension reform.
Right.
Tier 1, which is the current employees, that was 3 years ago.
Okay.
And that has been found unconstitutional. So our options are limited. Governor Rauner still tries to pursue a very aggressive agenda when it comes to pension reform. But really, anyone who has any sort of legal background says it's not going to work. You got to deal with what the Supreme Court says you can do.
We are so going to fix everything, but more after the break on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. It is the, you know what? It is right now. It's Christmas Eve. And we are talking about some pretty contentious things right now.
Do you celebrate Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Both. I actually love Christmas Eve.
Our big family celebration is the Eve. Tonight.
The dinner yeah. and...
So, Merry Christmas, by the way.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas, Rob.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas, Elliot. Yeah. Happy Hanukkah, Roger Badish.
Thank you. It'll start tonight at sundown.
I'm going to make Happy something Hanukkah. New this year. I'm going to make a chorizo lattes tonight.
Ooh.
Are you really?
I really am.
That's
I found
awesome.
A recipe. I was very excited about that. I was mentioning earlier that genetically I have some heritage in that is of Jewish descent, mm-hmm. and I'm Irish and Mexican as well. So I thought I wanted to find something different, and there it is: potatoes, latkes,
onions,
and chorizo.
I want to hear
the onions
something.
With it too.
What was that?
I want to hear something in your next stand-up routine about all
about
that.
The chorizo latkes.
That is awesome. There's a joke in there.
Oh, my dad freaked out when I got a phone call from a woman who had traced all the people with our last name who had been designated as a Jewish family during the Spanish Inquisition in the 1400s. This is a family, and they fled from Spain and went around, actually in different parts of the world, Puerto Rico, France, Latin America, all kinds of places. So, yeah. So I'm having chorizo latkes tonight in honor of that. Anyway, so it's weird to be celebrating the holiday and also talking about so many things that are important to the state of Illinois. Earlier, Rob, you in your news talked about one of our friends of the show
mm-hmm.
who has been fired from his position with the Department of Corrections with the state of Illinois. Former Representative John Anthony. I watched the video. He was fired for groping women at a holiday party recently. I have to say, knowing Representative Anthony, it's disheartening, it's upsetting, and at the same time, I watched that video and I thought, I've been there. I've been that woman who isn't, like, he kept holding her hand and pulling her, but did you watch the video?
I haven't seen the
surveillance video.
No.
I've been at holiday parties where I've been, hey, sexy, you look great, and been given a hug and sort of like almost too much of a smooch and like been held on too long. And I can't imagine what that video would look like of like trying to push back and like, hey, you're my boss. Why don't you take it down a notch? Or you're somebody who is, you know, in my world professionally, and I need this to not happen. And I feel badly for the women that were involved. I feel badly for Representative Anthony for whatever reason he was behaving that way, because the video is not – if I was his wife, that would be done. It would be rough for me to have a conversation tonight.
You've got to realize in this day and age, no matter who you are, where you're from, what your profession is, that you're probably going to be caught on tape, whether it's from a phone, from a surveillance camera. And I just don't know why it hasn't sunk in yet.
But that shouldn't be the deterrent.
No,
like being a jackass.
No. But what I'm saying, but in saying this, you've got to begin to change your behavior, because this is what happens. And you're right, absolutely, Patty. That shouldn't be why you should change your behavior. You should be acting normally to begin with.
Right.
But at the very least, know that you're probably going to get caught.
No one is here for your pleasure. No one is here for your admiration to like, oh, I was just complimenting you. I just was admiring how beautiful you are, how you're dressed. Or I was just saying, you know what? That lady was trying to leave that hotel lobby. And you watch the video. There's surveillance video of the, like, he keeps grabbing her hand, he keeps pulling her back. And here's the thing, I've been in that situation.
Yeah.
And she looks like she's not pushing him, she's not being aggressive. The defense mechanism is just smile, just laugh. This will be over in a minute. This has happened before. It's icky.
It's terrible, and it's terribly unfortunate, right? As you mentioned, former Representative Anthony has been on your show a number of times.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show. I literally call him a friend of the show.
Yes, and I, of course, served with him for, I think it was about 3 years. He engaged on some good issues. He was the definition of a guy you could do bipartisan things with, right? You could walk across the aisle and talk to him about bills and get his votes.
And would proudly tell you he was the first Republican, Latino, African-American member of the legislature in Springfield.
Yeah, and it was a lot of good stuff. But all that being said, like you
Elliot,
said,
hold on a second. Why are you laughing? I know. Hold on a second.
Sorry, I am suddenly remembering meeting him. And
yeah, because he'll tell you that.
He would tell me that.
He gives you that resume.
Yeah, and I remember kind of rolling my eyes too, but I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So I continue.
No, you know, listen, I viewed today's events with a great deal of sadness, because I think John, as an elected official, when he was in his official capacity, represented some really good things. The possibilities for bipartisanship, the possibilities of finding agreement and moving the state forward. And it's unfortunate that it has to be derailed by a really, really terrible incident like this. But again, you know, what's the root cause here? I mean, what is going on?
Well, and to that, it's not the first time this year on that side of the aisle. Representative and a rising star, Representative Sandek, also down in flames for reasons that are not fine. People have fantasies. They want to act on them. But he was somebody who was energetic, who was fighting for the people in his district, and was somebody that we talked to on the show as well. And similarly went down because he was being blackmailed by somebody online that he was having a relationship with.
Right, which is why the blackmail occurred.
Yes.
It was an inappropriate relationship, and he got caught in the web. So he's not going to get a whole lot of sympathy from me either.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not engaging in this type of behavior, chances are you're not going to get caught.
I agree with you, Rob. The thing that I would say is that, you know, unfortunately, and Ron Sandek and I probably on the issues that divide Democrats and Republicans, I would be willing to go out and say that there was, oh, no, that's not true. He was for marriage equality.
He was the
one thing.
So there was
probably one thing that we agreed on. Otherwise, we were probably.
Everything else, yeah.
But I sat in committees with him. He was smart. He was energetic. He was engaging. He was thoughtful.
So passionate.
And on the floor. Mm-hmm. I loved having him on the floor as the floor leader. And people said, well, but he was arrogant and he was condescending and sarcastic. And I said, yes, that was his job.
Yeah.
And when you brought a bill to the floor and you wanted to debate it, I wanted to face him because that meant I better bring my A game. I better be ready to explain my bill and defend it. And I liked him. I'm going to miss Ron Sandak a lot. I think that had he and Rob, this is interesting, right? Had he not had he lived in a liberal lakefront district, I don't think what he did would have cost him any votes. But living where he lived in LaGrange,
a
different sense of, you know, what's right or wrong. I mean, he did something in his personal life. He didn't harm anybody. He didn't have inappropriate contacts.
But he did not represent
anybody.
The values of a conservative district.
I know.
Well, there have been plenty of very intelligent, smart, energetic people that have engaged in questionable behavior all the way up to the White House.
Sure.
So we don't need to rehash that, but, you know.
Oh, no, we have.
But I'm saying right now we don't need
before
to,
debate,
to,
it was
to rehash that.
Reminded
but,
repeatedly.
Correct. No, which is why I'm not bringing it up again, but it happens. It happens all the time, and it happens with, you know. Smart, energetic, dynamic
people. I can't
people.
Believe I'm laughing about this because this has been a year of grabbing kitties and... But that video of Representative Anthony... No, but that was what that...
That was...
But that's what that looked like.
Bad.
That looked... No, but that looked like...
I like John.
Hey,
that was bad.
It was... But it looked like, hey, you know what? Our president-elect said this is okay. I'm going to keep pulling you back. I'm going to hold on to you. I'm not going to let you... I'm not going to allow you to leave this building... Because I'm a big dude. You're a woman. We work in the same department. It was disgusting. And I, by the way, just so everyone knows, I have invited former Representative Anthony on the show to address this. And I'm not doing this behind his back. I mean, this is a story that's been in the. This happened earlier in December. The story only broke today. Mm-hmm. And he is a friend of the show. I wish him all the best. I hope his family is okay. But it was disgusting, and it is not limited to men like him. More after this on 720 WGM. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is our news guy, Rob Martier. Up in news is Roger Badish. We also have Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer, Representative Robert Martwick. We've been talking about the exit of former Representative John Anthony, who was the deputy director of Illinois Corrections. And he has lost his job because during their holiday party earlier this month, he was not only caught on video, but also other women were alleging that he was groping them and harassing them, touching them. One woman was licked. He pushed himself against one woman. But Michael wanted to join the conversation and add his thoughts. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
Why don't you people cry and moan about all the politicians that are taking all their bribe money?
Which bribe money?
Sexual impropriety is wrong.
No. But hold on a second, Michael. Sexual impropriety and sexual assault are two different things.
Bribe money. They call their
Again, sexual assault and sexual impropriety are two different things. If someone enters into a relationship with somebody who agrees to it, if they have an affair with them, that's one thing. But aggressively attacking a woman physically is sexual assault. So I'm not really sure where you're coming from. You're trying to compare two different things that are.
Why did you hang up on me?
I'm not. I haven't hung up on you. I'm right here.
Okay. Well, then why don't you discuss the bribe money they take?
Which bribe money are you talking about?
Every dollar they get in bribe money, except the stupid ones, got brains enough to call it a campaign contribution, and it's all legal and lawful.
You know, Michael, you bring up a great, great point, and I'm glad that you called in to address this. You know, that's one of the biggest concerns that we have is campaign finance reform. how is money affecting the process? And, you know, in democracy, we have this struggle between what's called free speech, which is, you know, you have the right to express yourself. And our Supreme Court has said that you can do that through money. But the question is and I think you bring it up very good, is like, what influence does that have? There is a lot of money that's really beginning to affect people. And it really brings about some sort of ill repute on our system of democracy. For instance, Governor Rauner and three other people in this last election cycle spent $47 million. Four people spent $47 million on the last election cycle. And, you know, you wonder, in a system where everyone has free speech, well, how is our system set up? Does one person have more rights to free speech because they have more money? They have more rights. We're supposed to be one person, one vote. Do you get more power because you have more money? And I think we have to really look at that. So I agree with you. I think that's a good point that you bring up.
Makes sense, Michael. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling. And what was that, Elliot?
Okay. Rep, thank you for being so diplomatic and being nice about that.
Thank you. I do that well.
But my question is this. What the hell did that have to do with women being sexually assaulted?
No, Michael. No,
I know,
well,
but I'm
Michael,
just saying. It's called freaking deflecting. It's called, why are you talking about this? Why aren't you talking about that? Guess what? We can talk about both.
Yeah,
but
agree.
don't tell me that because some politicians take bribes, blah, 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 we shouldn't be talking about there being sexual impropriety, sexual assault, and stuff like that. That's deflecting. That's saying it doesn't matter. That a woman being groped in a hallway on video or whatever, we shouldn't be talking about that because we think that there are other things that are more important. I'm sorry. I disagree.
Yeah, and I agree with you, and I apologize if it seemed like I was
you were being diplomatic
and addressing Michael's concerns, right Michael? Yeah, he addressed that. Right, Michael?
If you don't want me to talk, why did you even take my call?
You're right there. We're talking to you right now. What are you talking about?
I've been on hold. You keep putting me on hold. I've been talking the whole time.
I know.
Because you got me.
What are you talking about? You've been on the entire time, Michael.
Bribe money. They take bribe money. I don't believe you.
What do you mean?
You're lying.
Am I talking to you right now?
Why don't you shut up? Why don't you shut up so I can talk?
Why don't you hang up on this guy? Because he obviously doesn't know how to have a conversation.
He said he's been on hold. He just told me to shut up.
I've heard every word he said this whole time. So, Michael, I think if you want to have a conversation with people, you need to have a little bit of respect.
Why do you keep trying to talk over me? Why do you keep trying to talk
Hello, pot. This is a kettle. You're black. Okay? So either... Do you know what a conversation, how that works? You know how that works? It's one person talks and one person listens. You seem to be real good at the talking part, really difficult, having a hard time with the listening part. Do you want to listen or do you just want to talk?
If you don't want me to talk, why did you take my call? Now shut up. It's my turn. The politicians take bribe money and call it campaign contributions. It's just that simple.
You know what listening is, Michael? You know what listening is? Because you don't seem to know what listening
is. I love my buttons. By the way, I do have buttons. All of buttons. Watch this. What? You talk. Oh.
You just want to keep.
What? Go ahead.
That's
go
ahead. Okay. Let him talk.
Neither one of us are saying. You just want to keep talking over me so that people listening to their radios can't really understand what we're saying. I just asked a simple question. Why don't the two of you sit there and vilify and excoriate the bribe-taking politicians? And don't tell me about freedom of expression. A politician does not have to take the money. A person can spend any amount of money they want buying newspaper advertisements, television advertisements, or anything. A person doesn't have to give the money to a politician. And if a person tries to give the money to a politician,
Michael,
the politician is not required to take the money.
Michael, Michael, you said those things a couple times. Michael, Michael,
politician can
Michael,
tell the guy.
Michael,
yes, that's my name. That's
Michael,
who I am.
Michael,
and Michael Foley.
Michael Foley.
Now, shut up and let me talk.
Michael,
the politician
Michael,
can tell the guy.
Michael,
he won't take the money.
Michael,
he'll spend the money on TV commercials.
Michael, you said that three times now. Michael,
it's your turn to talk.
I know, Michael. Why, when we talked about sexual assault, you called and started yelling at us? Okay,
I didn't tell you to stop talking about sexual assault. I did say sexual assault and sexual improprieties are wrong. I did say that.
But okay.
The problem with bribe money is massive. I'm not saying the problem of sexual assault, I'm not trying to belittle it.
Okay.
It's present, but I'm not saying every politician sexually assaults people.
I
agree. I will say almost every single politician takes bribe money, and lots of it, millions of dollars a year in bribe money. And they don't have to take a dollar. They don't have to take a dime. They can tell people, instead of giving me the money, go buy radio commercials, go buy TV commercials, put ads in the newspaper, print up handbills and hand them out on a street corner, print up flyers, spend your money yourself trying to get me elected.
But,
I will not take the money.
So
here we go.
Is not obligated to take the money.
Okay, Michael, hold on 1 second. Go ahead.
Well, you know, he brings up rather inartfully, but he brings up a couple of good points. Number one, you know, one of the things that's talked about on my side of the aisle that never really gets any traction is public financing of elections, right? So in other words, if you were to run for office, instead of being able to take money from lobbyists and interest groups or spend your own money, you would be limited to a certain pot of money that comes from the government, and this is what you run on. And that would sort of
You're a liar. You wouldn't be limited to anything.
What do you mean? Wait.
I'm not a liar.
Michael.
I'm telling you what I know.
Michael. Michael. Michael Foley. Michael Foley. Michael Foley. Yes. He was answering your question, and you started calling names. Now, none of us have called you
I
any
call
names.
I'm a liar because he's a liar.
You've told me to shut up. You've told him to. You've called him a
liar.
You've told me to shut up. I'm going to have to go to the news right now. We thank you for joining the conversation. We will continue this after the news. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us is Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer. Up in news, traffic, weather, everything you need to know is Roger Badish in his very spiffy tie and shirt.
I like spiffy.
Spiffy is good. And Representative Martwick also joining us in studio. We've been it's been heated a little bit in the last few segments, so let's switch gears a little bit. You and I were reminiscing off the air, and Elliot and I talked about this earlier in the week when we saw the first Star Wars. We call it the first Star Wars because I know it's the fourth installment. What is it? The New Force, The Great Hope,
The
Hope Awakens. What is it?
Episode 4, A New Hope.
These are the names of the movies.
Yes.
They are Star Wars, Return of the Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens. Those are the names of the movies. I don't know what happened before that. Don't care. Not interested. Rogue One is supposed to be interesting, but the movies that I know so far are Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi. And I saw my first Star Wars movie at the Gateway Theater.
Yeah,
on Lawrence Avenue.
Gateway. Oh,
with the
God.
Stars. Here's the thing. It had the starry ceiling, and the movie opens in the sea of stars with the titles opening. You saw it in the same neighborhood almost.
Yeah, I saw it at the Norge Theater, which at the time, you know, that was sort of in the 70s, that was the place to go. It was a modern theater at the time. And they had the second largest screen in the country.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it was massive. And my parents, I was 11 years old. You can do the math and figure out how old I am. I was 11 years old. My parents took me to the midnight show. And I will never forget sitting there. And the music starts, the little kind of quiet music, and then the words start to scroll, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far, far away. And you read that, and as soon as those words scrolled off the screen, the over the top of your head and ships over the top of your head. Well, it was the
destroyer.
Imperial destroyer chasing the rebel ship that was
the rebel
Princess
blockade Lane. Runner, the Tantive IV.
Ah, the Tantive. Wow.
That's why you're the chief geek officer.
You can talk all you want about legislation. We're in my land now.
I love it. I love it. But I will tell you that as I talk about it today, this many years later, I still get the hair stand up on the back of my neck. It was, and I've been a Star Wars junkie ever since. And yes, I saw Episode 4, Episode 5, Episode 6. And yes, I saw Episode 1, Episode 2, and Episode 3, and I'm one of the few people that loved them because I love anything
Roger,
with Star Wars.
Roger also enjoyed 1, 2, and 3.
I did.
I've enjoyed all of them, and I watched them in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because he's... and it gave it a completely different perspective from how I watched them originally, 4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3.
Right.
It really put it in a completely different context for me.
You know why? I think I'm one of those people that I get shifted sideways when they when George Lucas came back out with Star Wars and digitally enhanced and extra scenes and Empire and Jedi, and I thought I didn't need any of that. You're overthinking this now. And so when I saw 1, 2, and 3, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of more overthinking this. I had no connection with the kid who played Anakin Skywalker. No one. I didn't. Oh, he was really fast and speedy, and then Jar Jar Binks.
But it was the backstory.
You know what? There's a technique to story writing where you start writing and then you go, where did it get interesting? And you throw away everything before that. And that's what I felt like Star Wars was. I'm more than happy to jump into a story and go, oh, we're here now. I don't know who they were chasing or how they got here or why she's got these files and she's putting them in this droid. I'm in. I got it. I was a kid and I was like, boom, I'm all in.
4, 5, and 6 stood on its own for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, Empire even stands on its own. Jedi, I think, is probably the outlier, but I still enjoy that as well.
I saw it in Las Vegas, actually. We were living in Las Vegas at the time when it first came out and saw it at the Boulevard Mall.
And what did you think?
And there was a long line, and I drooled a lot.
You drooled a lot?
I drooled a lot.
I don't understand where that comes from.
Well, because I was enamored by the whole thing. Okay. I was like a kid in a candy store. I had never seen anything like it.
Me neither.
Before, I was completely drawn in on it. I loved not only the story, but all of the special effects. I loved the acting was good. The story was well written. The action was well paced. In fact, it wasn't until many, many years later when it came out on VHS that I actually noticed how inferior the special effects were on the VHS transfer. You could actually see all the little square lines around each of the planes. Spaceships as they move through the scene, and kind of took something away from it for me.
But here's the thing for me, and I know that George Lucas felt like he was restrained by technology and there was so much more he wanted to do. And to me, what he ended up doing was telling a better story.
Yeah.
The limits of technology.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's what happens with 1, 2, and 3 is that
yes.
With the limits taken off of technology, it becomes so overdone with the special effects that you lose the story. But I still love it. I can't help it. I still love it.
You just love all the ships taking off and landing, off and landing.
It is some cool moments.
Elliot, I don't know what
when Empire is. When Empire opens, and by the way, when we got into our polar vortex and everyone was showing the what are the animals?
Tauntauns.
The Tauntauns and going to the grocery store. Need anything? Because it's so cold. That's how Chicagoans be like, I'm going out in this if I gotta. I loved every moment of Empire Strikes Back. I think Jedi got weird a little bit, but I still enjoyed it. But it was
the problem with Jedi.
Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah, most people will point to that one saying it's because the Empire is overthrown by teddy bears at the end.
No, but my thing is the transition from Luke, right? Of the last time you see him, he finds out that Darth Vader is his father. He loses his arm. There's so much that happens, and now he's like this super cool. All of a sudden, gets it. He's tied into the Force, yeah.
and he dresses in black too.
Yeah,
just like
this
dad.
Long flowing robe, and yes, and that to me was a little bit. There was a great quality of you not quite knowing why Leia's now bizarrely in a bikini and a slave, and she's chained up, and Han's in the carbon. You know, they're laughing at the fact that he's there. There's a mystical quality about it, but it's also like, really? He's already there? That's all it took was finding out that his dad was Darth Vader.
You know what blew it for me at the end? When he suddenly realizes that Leia is his sister. And I'm sitting there going, really? You have the power of the Force? And you couldn't tell long time ago that this was your sister? You didn't feel the connection?
No. Interesting you say that.
Seriously.
Interesting you say that. I think that he was drawn to her and he mistook it for attraction rather than a relationship.
Which got creepy in the third movie again.
Who hasn't wanted to kiss their sister? Hey, Glenn, what do you want to say? Glenn?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, over time, people have been bashing the original movie coming out, Star Wars. But I saw Star Wars movie at the Grauman's Theater when it first came out.
Come on. Seriously?
That's awesome.
Seriously.
That's...
I mean, I saw a lot of movies there, but nothing beats that. You'll never take that experience away.
Mm-mm.
And this is new stuff. The newer movies are better. But, nothing beats the experience of even watching any movie at the Grauman. But
how are you mean? You what know, what then, newer movies? The Star Wars movies or movies in general are better than seeing them at the
movie
Grauman?
In general. You know, I saw Popeye at the Grauman, and they had the
Robin Williams, Popeye,
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, and they had the whole village built on the back side of the theater. You couldn't go in there, but you could see it. And it's just the experience of going to Hollywood. If you've never been there, I know you have.
Did you grow up there, Glenn? Did you grow up in L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hollywood's good. It's completely changed now than when I, 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
And not far from the Chinese Theater is the Jim Henson Studios, which I took a picture of, and it's the original Charlie Chaplin Studios as
well. It wasn't there when I was there.
Well,
it wasn't there. This is all new. I mean, Hollywood is an adventure in itself now.
It is.
When I lived in California, you went to Hollywood. You went to Hollywood just to go to the theaters. But yeah, it's
what
but like I say. Going back,
Glenn, what took you from L.A. to Wisconsin?
Well, I was born and raised in Wisconsin. I moved to California. I was there for 15 years. That's where I met my wife.
Aww.
And then we moved back to Wisconsin. Earthquakes had a lot to do with it.
Gotcha. Have you seen? You were talking about Star Wars and having seen it at the Grauman's Theater. Have you seen Rogue One?
No, I have not seen it yet.
Are you interested?
No. Excuse me?
Are you interested in seeing it?
Well, yeah, I am.
Me too.
I'll probably wait till it comes into Finlex.
Gotcha.
I am interested. I'm waiting for the box set, but I'm not sure if I can afford the box set.
I know the feeling. Well, Glenn, hold on the line, and Dan Long will take your information. We're going to send you out a gift card to Apt Electronics, okay?
All right, thank you.
I love that you shared that memory with us and didn't tell me to shut up. That's how this works.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Glenn. Thank you so much. Hold on, Dan. We'll get your information and we'll send you out an Apt Electronics gift card. We want to thank our friends out in Glenview and especially Steve Shapiro, who always takes care of us, taking care of families with great stuff.
Apt is the best.
Isn't it an amazing place?
I'm a longtime Apt customer. It's just there. It's modern delivery of old school services, right?
I agree. Everybody, if you have a problem, you can call them up and go, "Hey, my dishwasher is making a funny noise," and they're like, "Well, we'll send somebody out."
Yeah, no, they're the best.
They are the best. Hey, Chris, we're gonna take your call right after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick of the Fighting 19th, or the Rootin' Tootin'. What do you prefer, Rootin' Tootin' 19th?
Which one do you like?
I like the Rootin' Tootin'.
Not that I'm before Rootin' Tootin'.
Why do we want to fight?
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
We're all golly gee willikers.
Right.
Aren't you, Elliot, do you see that in our neighborhood when you come and visit, when you go to the Gale Street Inn with me? We're Rootin' Tootin', aren't we?
Oh, no, you're all ready to fight. I mean, I see people fighting in the streets. There's a Dunkin' Donuts.
That was a different thing altogether. Yeah. Let's not discuss what happened in the Dunkin' Donuts in the 16th district.
It's like, wow.
The night that one of the playoff games for the Cubs when we were at the Iron Horse.
That's
not the 19th. That's the who has that district just north of
district?
You?
North of me, 39th, that'd be D'Amico.
D'Amico. I don't know from D'Amico. D'Amico?
Yeah, he's just north of me. Or
I was ready to call it's
McAuliffe. Yeah.
Oh, were you in Edison Park?
Yeah, we were in Norwood Park. Yeah, there were people in the street fighting with each other in front of Revel. Apparently, Revel and Iron Horse had like some sort of.
Oh yeah, that's McAuliffe.
That was a little rootin' tootin' right there.
It was like West Side Story, but without any singing and dancing.
It was. He's not wrong. Oh, I grew up less than 100 yards from that spot. Anyway, we've been talking about Star Wars and watching Rogue One is prominent in conversations right now because it's the big movie that came out. It's not a prequel. It's sort of an intrequel, isn't it? It's not.
I call it a prequel. In fact, I will call it
intrequel because, it's not a prequel to Phantom Menace, is it?
No, but it's a prequel to A New Hope.
So it can't. But it can't be a prequel.
I call it
Phantom Menace is a prequel. Rogue One is an intrequel.
I call it Episode 3.5.
Oh, and that would be a what?
That would be an intrequel.
Chris, what are your thoughts on all these movies? What has been your experience? Hey, Chris.
Hey, Patty, some of them have been a NyQuil, to be honest with you.
I agree. Phantom Menace. Go ahead.
First of all, I would like to say happy holidays to you and your guests and your whole crew.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Chris. Same to you. Happy holidays. Chris, can I ask you a question? Which holiday do you celebrate?
Anyone that ends in a Y.
Nice. Every day he celebrates.
There you go.
I like that.
Thank you. Every day.
Mm-hmm. All right. I thought what you guys did with the caller that I'm not going to name, and you know who I'm talking about, was extreme patience and professionalism. And I've listened to you for a long time, Patty. And for someone to tell you to shut up and to tell your guest he's a liar and still be on the air is the utmost respect that I've ever heard from a radio host.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
I listened intensely to it, and I was waiting for you to just... And you didn't, and then that was.
And as we both know, she can.
I have the ability.
Yeah,
but
she's the queen of overnights. Absolutely.
That's right. Thank you so much,
Chris. With Star Wars, I realized my father was the dark side when I seen black socks and sandals.
I love that.
Oh man! Yeah, he embraced the dark side with that look, didn't he? That's too funny.
Yeah, he thought he did.
Was he out? Now, did he do it when he was like mowing the lawn, grabbing the newspaper? In what instance was he wearing the black socks?
Drinking a High Life.
Yes.
Oh, family occasion.
Old style. Oh, family vacation.
Hams.
You know, if Jesus wore sandals, he had to. It was just wrong.
Oh, too funny. You had to live with that shame, didn't you, in public?
Yeah, I walk behind like an apostle sometimes, I guess.
Either one.
You guys are amazing.
Thank you, Chris. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go on a limb and say that Elliot, Representative Martwick, and myself, we're a similar generation. Our dads wore their boxers, their sandals, their black socks with their skinny white legs, their sleeveless T-shirts, which has had many names over the years. But just like around the house, like that was garb. Like that was how you dressed when you hung out with your family.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Agreed. Yeah.
And then when you're growing up, you're like, that's not what I'm going to look like.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I can never imagine my husband. Like, I can't even imagine him wearing a sleeveless T-shirt and boxers in front of our kids. I mean, like, it would be like me sitting at the table wearing my bra and underwear in front of Griffin and Declan. Like, what are we eating? Come on, here's breakfast, everybody. But no, my dad. I mean, like, and like that, like opening on the boxers, just like, just no cares given whatsoever that his daughter's sitting across the table trying to get the last piece of bacon.
Oh, and please, I'm watching you online, and Roger is rocking that shirt.
Isn't he really? And you can't see the details on the dreidel tie, but it is spectacular as well.
Absolutely. I wish everybody a blessed holiday and a great show, Patty, as always.
Thank you so much, Chris. We appreciate that. Rock those black socks if you got them. Just not in public.
Rock them if you got them.
That's right. Thanks, Chris. Merry Christmas. Now, I want to see if Jeffrey will hold on because we're going to continue our conversation. Thank you for showing me your black sock, Representative Martwick. You You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District. We decided the rootin' tootin' for now.
Rootin' tootin', 19th District.
The rootin' tootin'. Elliot Serrano, our chief geek officer. We've been talking about Star Wars. Roger Badish up in news, traffic, weather, sports. You've got everything Roger. Tonight with your dreidel tie, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Dan Long, sweating bullets a little bit in the producer's booth when... Listeners tell me to shut up. Everyone was
apparently
expecting,
not typing very well either.
You're typing just fine. You are trying to find the appropriate words. Like when Jeffrey calls in and he wants to share something, he's got some ideas about what the series of Star Wars means to him and what it turned into. Hey, Jeffrey, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I want to say, you know, I've seen the first three Star Wars movies, and then I've seen the second three, which is a total of six.
Okay, wait, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, hold on a second. What? So when you say the first three, do you mean Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, or do you mean Phantom Menace, Clone Wars?
The first three that came out.
Yes. So,
you know, the first order. You know, Star Wars, and then there was the second one.
See?
And there was the third one.
I agree with you, yes.
And then they did the second series of three.
Right.
And that kind of grew me off because I started getting bored. But with them, because you know something, when I saw them originally, I kept saying I've seen this before, you know, in a lesser form, but it's been done before in a way, and you know, and I realized what George Lucas was doing was he was copying or doing in his own version of Flash Gordon, which came out in the 1934 to 1940. I don't know if you ever seen him on TV even.
Yeah,
I have not, but I've heard that comparison, Roger.
Buster Crabb.
The that opening crawl from Star Wars comes from Flash Gordon.
Oh.
Yeah. And there are scenes in The Phantom Menace when Padme when Queen Amidala is talking to others through this portal bitty. That's also drawn directly from Flash Gordon. So, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. George Lucas wanted to do a Flash Gordon movies, but he couldn't get the rights, so he created Star Wars.
Well, I wanted to mention that. You know, the special effects are laughable compared with today. But, you know, they are relying more on the special effects than they are on story.
And I agree.
The original Flash Gordon, they tried to go with story so that you wanted to get to the theater to see it, you know, not just for the special effects, but the story too.
Have you seen The Force?
They did a total of three movies or 39 episodes.
And Jeffrey, have you seen Force Awakens? That's the one with
Rey? No, I haven't seen all that yet.
I would say that J.J. Abrams has done a good job of going back to storytelling because I find Rey to be compelling. I mean, the idea the Stormtrooper... is struck by, well, I don't want to ruin this for you, so I would recommend that you watch The Force Awakens and just to see what you think. I mean, there's both derivative elements because, you know, he taps into our sentimental needs of, oh, there's Han Solo, there's a Millennium Falcon, there's Princess Leia, who's now this commander. I would say give it a shot because I think the storytelling is stronger than it was in The Phantom Menace, in the Clone Wars. Yeah.
Oh, and I wanted to mention everybody should grab the kids, and you know, because the kids are going, "Oh, Star Wars, the greatest thing on earth." Well, just to let them, you know, they might laugh at it, but at least show them Flash Gordon because that might blow the minds of some of the kids.
Well,
because I think this is an all new thing, and you know, my mother was very small. She went and saw, you know, the whole things at the theaters, and. You know, and I now have all the Flash Gordon stuff, and I look at that, and I'm astounded at what they did, and the stories are pretty good.
Yeah.
But the kids today should at least know that before there was Star Wars, it was Flash Gordon with Buster Crabb. You know, because if they ever saw that, they might say, hey, you know, this is kind of neat stuff, too. And the ships, by the way, and everything that they had, because everything that they did in the 1930s and 40s, like I said, was a bit hokey. But they had the spaceships fighting and the dog fighting and everything else.
And it was storytelling.
The thing that they did in the 30s and the 40s, they later redid in Star Wars.
Jeffrey, quick question.
Like I said, I just wish that the kids would know about the original, where it all came from.
I agree. Jeffrey, I have a quick question for you. Have you watched any of Doctor Who?
Oh, you mean Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Doctor Who.
And I, you know what? I suspected as much, because I would say the storytelling in Doctor Who is kind of what you're talking about. That Flash Gordon, that world, creating these elements and characters that we don't otherwise know but can really relate to. And I am fascinated by how many generations continue to really get involved in that and really be passionate about it. Don't you think?
Right. Well, I
agree. But how about, I'm going to go, maybe this is blasphemy. I don't know. Star Trek?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
That was blasphemy.
But that's not blasphemy,
the
Jeffrey.
The original Star Trek,
yeah,
Star Trek with William Shatner was about storytelling. There was very little.
Well, because they were so hamstrung by budgets, they couldn't do a lot of really elaborate special effects.
No, and very.
They tell some of the, Shatner himself tells some great stories in his autobiographies, that you would have the special effects guys from Star Trek rummaging through the garbage bins at Desilu Studios trying to find things that they can make props out of. And that every once in a while they'd find something that was really good or different, and they'd high-five each other. So they're dumpster diving, trying to make things for this show that would later become like this piece of American pop culture in Americana, you know?
Yeah. And that was a show that, as you mentioned, Desilu Productions,
Lucille Ball saved
yeah. Star Trek, because it was in her. It was in the ROK Productions. That was an ownership thing that she was like, yeah, let's make this show.
There was they did the first pilot, which didn't screen very well. The executives didn't like. It was fairly pricey, but she believed in it enough to say, okay, you know what? Let's do a second pilot and let's try it again. Yeah. The second pilot gave us what? William Shatner, who later would go on to be, again.
Yeah, William Shatner.
Yeah, the guy.
Hey, Jeffrey, will you do me a favor and please hold on the line? Dan will take your information. Yeah. We've got a Lou Malnati's gift card for you. Sound good?
Yeah. Could I mention one more thing?
Of course.
I wanted to mention, you know, you brought up Doctor Who, and I think the greatest tragedy is now the best one was William Hartnell. He did it from 63 to 66. He was the original Doctor Who, the first of 12 or something he's done so far.
Uh-huh.
But the tragedy is that somebody went along, and there are not that many of Hartnell's episodes left from the 3 years he did it. They erased them.
Yeah, because back in those days, they didn't have the bit where they stored them on film.
Yeah, they would record
over them, right.
Yeah.
So
Well, they didn't get permission to do that, though. Right. You know, they were supposed to get permission, and somebody just took them and did it.
Yeah, right. That happened a lot. Actually, and this is a total sidetrack thing, but Johnny Carson had the same issue where he wanted to own all of his back episodes, and they used to go back and film over existing film.
Yeah.
So that it wasn't uncommon in the 60s.
A lot of those old Hartnell episodes, if you see them and folks collect them, it's from fans of the show who somehow had copies or tapes of
it. So it exists.
Yeah, they exist. It's taken a long time to get them.
Half of them don't, as far as I know.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. A lot of them are gone because, like as you said, yeah, they recorded over them, so there was no way of saving them.
In fact, there is an episode right now that is on Amazon Prime where the videotape doesn't exist, but the audio track does.
What?
And someone has done a cartoon. It has to be cartoon. It was hand-drawn.
Animated, yes.
Animated, and the audio track is the real audio track. No one has redubbed it or recorded it or anything, and it's on Amazon Prime right now, and they're actually putting one episode per week out. Dalek episode.
Power of the Daleks.
Power of the Daleks.
Yep.
And that's on right now, and it takes a little getting used to, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. I would love that as a sort of almost a radio experience, just to hear the audio even without the animation. Which, by the way, thank you, Jeffrey. Hold on the line, and Dan will take your information for a Lou Malnati's gift card. Go to loumalnati's.com for the best pizza, some of the best pizza in Chicago. But, Elliot, we have something to tease right here. You think you may have heard me for the very first time on the radio when we were kids. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District, the Rootin' Tootin'.
Rootin' Tootin'.
I do. I love my neighborhood. I mean, I grew up a little bit north of where I live now,
right,
which is not your district. I grew up on Northwest Highway between Raven and Niagara, and there are some great places to shop. If you have last-minute shopping for Christmas, please, please do yourself a favor. If you can make it up to the Northwest Side, and I'm sure there are great places all over the city, find your neighborhood joints that have these antique shops, these one-of-a-kind places, because I found some really great gifts today that I'm so... I told Elliot I couldn't stop talking when he picked me up. I'm like, and then I got this. And then also, there was some great things, and it was really, it's so cool.
There are so many wonderful places to shop in the neighborhoods. And, you know, I think that's, with all of the bevy of problems that we face today, so much of it could be solved by investing in your own neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, there's so much positive about that. Find the restaurants in your neighborhood. It's amazing when I tell people in our neighborhood about certain restaurants that are award-winning, and they're like,
Gale
I've never
Street.
Been there.
Mom's Secret Recipe.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I know. Community.
Yeah, you know, community's great.
Great restaurants. And it's like, go patronize the local restaurants and patronize the local shops. There's wonderful shops.
Yeah. No, it's a great area. I'm trying to find the name of the shop that I was in because the woman who was running the joint was a retired, the joint. I went in there and it's a really sweet shop, Roger. It's right by the 7-Eleven on Northwest Highway. There's a nail salon. There's, it's funny because I grew up really a block away from there and Griffin and I walked in. Griffin wanted something specific for his dad, for my husband. And I have a couple things, but Griffin wanted to be involved in picking something out. And I can't tell you what I bought him because they're also going to be gifts for other friends of the show. Mm-hmm. And but this shop, there are different antique dealers that have kind of stalls throughout this.
Right.
Not mm-hmm. a very big storefront. But everything from the most amazing cocktailware to magazines and baseball. Like mm-hmm. I saw a football card for Gale Sayers. And I'm like, who do I really? Know that I want to buy this for?
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know what? Another one that I love up there, and mm-hmm. it's not too far from where the girls go to school, but it's on Northwest Highway.
Mm-hmm.
Gigi's Doll Shop.
Yes.
I
Gigi's
love
is great.
That. Place.
Well, there's the hobby shop right there, too.
Exactly.
Gigi's Doll
the
Shop.
The hobby and toy shop right
yep,
there.
It's
we
right
got
there.
Their balsa wood airplanes at the hobby shop.
Yeah. Now you can get everything you need,
I
all
know.
Your train needs,
oh,
your,
it's fantastic.
All your model building. But also, Representative Martwick just mentioned the American Science and Surplus Store,
yep.
which is right there at the Foster, Milwaukee area. And I wish I had time to, by the way, 312-981-7200. We do have a little bit of time. Tell us your great neighborhood joints for buying last-minute Christmas gifts. It's Christmas Eve. People have all day Saturday. A lot of your places are going to be open until 5 o'clock because it's Saturday. They want to help you out. I mean, this is really what it felt like in Norwood Park.
Can I give one?
Yeah.
Rep Shy. Have you been to Rep Shy?
What's Rep Shy?
So it's rep, like represent replica, CHI Chicago.
Oh.
And it is Milwaukee and Montrose, just north of Montrose.
Okay.
And it has everything funky, cool, artistic about the city of Chicago. Whether it's rocks, glasses, or a shaving kit, or a big wall, piece of wall art.
I've everything not seen that.
Little baby singlets, which I've got, you know, the little baby onesies.
Get all that. Yep.
Absolutely. With, you know, Chicago flags imprinted on it. Not just basic imprinted, but really in an artistic fashion.
Right.
Great, great stuff.
That's see, and I love that. And also Whatnots on Northwest Highway has some stuff. They've got some shirts. They have a lot of they even had a stained glass. I wish that I had a place to put the stained glass window because you could put that on top of a window. They have, like, all that salvage, you know, material mm-hmm. that's great for decorating.
Well, since we're throwing out recommendations, I mean, I want to say, especially right now with the economy being what it is and how many of these shops are struggling, support your local comic shop.
Yes.
You know, Challengers Comics on Western, near Western and Milwaukee is a great shop to go to if you're looking for comic books, graphic novels, toys, things. Mm-hmm. Those guys, Dal and Patrick there are great. They're great guys to go check out and find something for the geek or nerd in your life. Third Coast Comics, Which is on Sheridan Road. Also a great shop. I know Terry. Who
some of my old comics are there.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I donated some to him.
But he's a great guy. Does a great job. Makes a very. He loves talking comics. He's a. Terry is actually also a really great follow on Twitter and Facebook. So, you know, really, but find that local comic shop in your area or the local bookstore in your area and patronize them because
local bookstore, local vinyl shop.
Yeah, vinyl shops too. Although I'll say vinyl shops are doing fairly well right now. I know I go to Rediscover Records in Elgin. That's a great shop.
These are the great places to go. Dan, do you got a joint?
All the way out to Elgin for records.
Well, I live out in that area. Yes. So.
Okay.
But Rich and always finds all the old Star Wars albums for me.
I go to Sputnik Records, which is in our area. It's on Irving, just west of Austin. Sputnik Records, which is next to Percolator Coffee. So you can go get a big coffee. And
now
it's
I'm in.
Awesome.
I'm all in.
And then shop for your vinyl. Vinyl and books right next door. It's great. And it's connected to the same store.
Because Hot Wax is gone. How about you, Dan? What do you got?
I'll go to Beverly Records, kind of on 100 and on Western, kind of between... not good. Between like 115th and 111th, I think, whereabouts. Or Dusty Groove, 1120
okay.
North Ashland.
So here's my question to both of you with the vinyl. How do I know? I mean, like, is it just by sight that I can tell that it's not going to be scratched? I mean, I guess you can tell it's not scratched. Or is there a certain amount of scratches that's okay?
I mean, if you could, if the record isn't sealed, you could pretty much take it out of the sleeve and look.
Most vinyl shops will let you.
Play it?
Spin it.
Yeah. Oh, so spin it.
You could spin it too, yeah.
Oh, that's what I'm... See, the store that I went to today is called Northwest Treasures on Northwest Highway, and that is Northwest Treasure at 6217 North Northwest Highway. Whatnots is on the 6100 block of Northwest Highway. I know that because it used to be a dog grooming shop, and before that, it was a laundromat. When I was a little kid, that's where we did all of our laundry on Northwest Highway. So now it's an antique.
Awesome.
I know. It's amazing what's happened on Northwest Highway. I'm so proud of that. Edison Park has a lot of great shops. As Dan mentioned, Beverly's got great places. Elliot's mentioning places in Elgin you should go to. And Roger Battish, you got any other places?
Wow. Well, Elliot mentioned Third Coast Comics.
It's all right. No pressure.
I got to admit, I do a lot of online stuff. Because I can't handle the stress in stores.
Right.
We really don't buy a lot anymore.
No, I agree. That was why I wish I could. I will tell you on Tuesday when I'm back on the air. I do have Monday night off. Oh, by the way, can I just say there's a listener named, and I'll call her Lauren because that's her name. She jumped on Facebook, on WGN's Facebook page, and said, "Why doesn't Patty go away? Take some time off."
Oh, because you work so much.
Yeah, but do you know that I was on vacation? I was actually gone. I wasn't here.
You took a vacation?
I went on vacation. I went all out of here.
I knew you were on vacation.
Gawny.
I will make one recommendation.
So good. So good.
If you like books.
I do.
A friend of mine stopped teaching and opened up her own bookstore.
And that is
it serves alcoholic beverages. It has a coffee bar.
What?
What's the name of this place?
Yes.
I'm on my way.
Yeah, we're done. We're in. Is it open?
It is. It's not too far from you guys. It is called Volumes Bookstore. It is at 1474 North Milwaukee.
Okay, yeah,
and they will
that's
be
great.
Open from 9:30 this morning to 10 at night.
I'm saying these are for your last minute Christmas shopping. I know that there's the impulse to go to the malls, to go to your bigger department stores, go to your neighborhoods. You will find something unique you can't find anywhere else. I found vintage books that I think are going to make great coffee table conversation pieces. I'll talk about them next week once I've given them and see if they're actually appreciated. For Elliot, I don't even know where Steve got your big Chewbacca poster, but those are things you can't find anywhere else. Wherever Steve got that from, that's a unique piece.
I didn't even know it existed.
Except for the showerhead thing. That was a little bit
showerhead weird. Was pretty cool, although it makes me think
that's, R2-D2 showerhead.
It makes me think that Steve's thinking about me in the shower.
Yeah, that got weird. I know. Yeah. Is it weirder if it was him or me? I think it's better if it's him.
I think it's better. Well, yeah. The kids, maybe.
It's all Griffin. It's from Griffin. Yeah. Hey, Brandon, what do you got for us? Where should we go shopping?
Hi. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all of you.
Happy
I
holidays.
Love your show, Patty.
Thank you.
There's a place in Andersonville called American Hands. It's handmade wooden, like really cool stuff between puzzles
and just beautiful stuff that they make. And it's all made by hand, and it's all wooden. My dad's a retired policeman in Chicago, and I got him. He's a toothpick guy, one of those, you know, hey, how you doing? Mm-hmm. And he's got a toothpick in his mouth all the time.
Sure.
So I got a handmade toothpick holder, and it was really cool. And one other thing I got him was a lure that has the old Chicago star on it, and it said, Chicago police, we don't catch and release anything. He's got that. He's got that framed. It's really cool.
Okay, that's called American Hams in Andersonville?
Yes. It's a very, very cool store.
Oh, so many. That's a great story. American Hams in Andersonville. That's great. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate that.
All right. Merry Christmas.